Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're in the middle of chapter 2. We're going to start it again. It's funny, like, you know, on the one hand...
Chapter 2.
On the one hand, I never like to repeat ourselves, and when we just did something, you say it's review. But there's certain parts of Navi that every time you do it, it's like a new message. Like, it's just, wow, like you just want to do it again, or the, I don't have that talent, but there's certain people that learned Navi in Hebrew school when they were little, and it sticks with them their whole life. They remember and they can recite the verses, and I'm not sure if the Rebbe stood over them with the ruler and said, recite this, or, but it's a beautiful thing when it sticks with us. In other words, when there's like a verse strikes us and we can quote it and we can remember, we can find comfort in it, or we can think of a situation. So there are certain chapters or certain things that, this is one of them. We're also in the middle of it, so I thought I would start again. This book of the prophets began with the prophecies that he saw about the destruction of Yerushalayim, the fact that it would be inevitable that we would be sent into exile, and the Beis Hamikdash should be destroyed. Before the building was destroyed or the people were harmed, there's an idea that we had already destroyed spiritually, meaning that since we spiritually had lost the right to be, have Hashem's presence amongst us, so it was just a matter of time till physically we would lose the right to be in Eretz Israel. And so that description of what happened, what was it that why Hashem, before Hashem would destroy the Beis Hamikdash, it already had been that our service had become meaningless. And that we talked about in the first chapter, which somewhat the idea is that we have two sets of commands, that it's true that we're religious in the sense that we connect to God, but as long as we don't connect with people and care for people, then our service to Hashem is meaningless. And that's what it said before, like, you know, you try to, people were taking bribes and they were corrupt and they weren't allowing justice for the widow and the orphan. And, then they would think that their service had some meaning to Hashem. Hashem said, no way. That's not Judaism. That's not what it's all about. And so that, the purpose of the prophecy was getting people to change their ways, warning people. And so the hope would be that the people would do teshuva. And Hashem gives people many chances. He gives them a message. He gives them a chance. Could be some people did teshuva. One of the parts over here, which is interesting, is that there's a combination of the fact that we were going to be punished, but the punishment wouldn't last forever. In other words, we weren't the light unto the nations that we needed to be, and we would be sent into exile. But then, at the very same time, you have these visions of the future when Eretz Yisrael will become that place where it'll be the light unto the nations. And so, somehow, they say when you give a punishment, you're supposed to tell them how long. Like, if you're going to go and put a child into time out, you say you can come back in 10 minutes, right? Or if he's kicked out of something, you could say, well, you'll have a chance to come back. So, in a way, Hashem, like, put us in time out, but he said, don't worry, you're going to come back, and it's going to be great. And so, we can handle the time out if we know that it's not permanent. And so, that's kind of the vision that's over here. Verse 2, V'hayu b'achris hayamim, and it'll be in the end of days. The amazing thing is that Christians took this vision, and you know they have this about beating the plowshare, the weapons into plowshares, and the. But it's the vision of the Jewish people. It's the vision of us coming back to our Beis Hamikdash and us serving Hashem. And they took parts of it, they quote parts of it, but they don't quote it in full. It's just a. But it's from our Tanakh. It's from So this is what it'll be. Today things are not straight, but in the future they will be. Nachon, in modern Hebrew they use that. even sometimes when they give directions, when they say straight ahead, they say nachon, nachon, you know, like, or nachon means like yes or proper or okay. But it'll be nachon, it'll be proper har Hashem, barosh harim, and it'll be on top of the mountain. The nisim igavah, and it'll be a focal point of the world. The naru I love kolagoyim, and I spoke about this last week, that we definitely have to think about the rest of the world. And I was, even though our focus is on rebuilding the Jewish people and our focus is on our brothers first, we definitely have to realize that we want Hashem's message to come to the rest of the world. And certainly when we interact with non-Jews, if they want to know about Hashem and about the world and how we see things, there's nothing wrong in expressing that to them and trying to tell them a moral vision of the way things should be. And often I run into non-Jews that are very upright and moral and have the right, you know, want to see the right things happen, and there's nothing, you know, but that's really quoted over here. The nations will turn unto the mountain of Hashem. Verse 3, Kolchu Amim Rabim, and there'll be many nations, and everybody's going to want to jump on the bandwagon. In other words, when the Mashiach comes, everybody wants to join our team. V'omer l'chu now le'al har Hashem, they'll say, let's all go. And they'll say, you know where they want to go? They all want to go to the Jewish house. They're all interested in Judaism. And I mentioned to you, on a smaller level, it is happening. Even today, there are many, many converts, many people from around the world that find themselves interested in Judaism to a large extent. We may not be aware of it, because by the time they come to our synagogue, they look like everybody else. You never know. But sometimes, as a rabbi, you get called upon to like be part of the base in order to sit in. There's a large percentage of converts that are from different nations of the world that find themselves interested in that they want to join the God of the Jews. And ad hoc. In other words, they set it up. If there's a need, they set up based in from time to time. So it takes a lot of time, you know, to have somebody, you know, we take it for granted, you know, we're all used to, you know, Jewish holiday cycles and kosher and the knowledge of Hebrew and the knowledge of Torah and Tanakh, but it's a huge amount of knowledge, and somebody that's coming from a different vantage point, it takes a long time. It's not something that goes quick, you know, it's a slow, but these nations are going to come. And they're going to go to Israel. Now, why should the Israel be the focal point? Because Ki Mitzion Tetzei Sora, because Zion will be the place where Torah will come out. One of the reasons that it's very popular today, the idea of birthright. Birthright got confused. In other words, they send people, kids to Israel, thinking, let them just go to Israel, and that'll make all the difference in the world. But it's not just to go to Israel. It's to go to Israel to learn Torah. That's the only mistake they make. It's such a shame. You know, they're sending these American Jews all the way to Israel, and they're touring the land, and they're seeing this, and they're seeing that, and they want to give them, a lot of them are unaffiliated, they're not members of synagogues, they know very little about Judaism, and they think, wow, this is really great, birthright, let's give them their, but then they don't give them Torah, which is what happens is that,
depends what organization it is.
Yeah, that's right. Even Birthright has some that are more more focused. One of the reasons that we, at great expense, it's become very much the norm to send our children away for at least, you know, 1 year after high school, is that it makes a big difference, and that even students that have found that they weren't so interested in Judaism throughout high school, once they go to Israel, It's a whole different story, and it's an amazing thing. You have kids that they were the last. They'll tell you. I met people like that. They'd be the last person in the world who you would think would be sitting in a yeshiva or who would study Torah or have any interest in anything like that. They go to Israel and they open a chumash or they open a gemara, and all of a sudden, it does something to them. That's the place. And that's really, because Zion, you know, we try to give them Torah in America or in Atlanta or wherever they want to tune in from, but there's no place like Israel. Ki Mitzion Tetzei Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. You go to Yerushalayim and you get the Dvar Hashem straight from there. There's no competition. They used to have, in the 80s, in the 60s, they used to have people would go backpacking, and they would tour the world. It was popular in those days. Today it's not popular, but then luckily Israel was on the world. So you'd have a lot of young Jews in every country in Europe who'd be backpacking, who'd be taking a year off before they went to college or before the army or after the army, and they would go. In Israel, by the way, they do that after the army. They go and they backpack, and they. But it's become it stopped. People aren't doing that now. I don't know why. It's not the in thing anymore. I don't know that. But what would happen is that Jewish students would backpack around, and they'd go to a youth hostel, and they'd go to Europe and Scandinavia, and just to see what the rest of the world was. And Israel, like I said, is on the map of the world, so some of them would end up in Israel. And they had rabbis that would be on the lookout for these young Jewish students, and they would tap them on the shoulder and say, how are you? Where are you from? Can you use a meal? Would you like to see what a yeshiva looks like? And a high percentage of those students who were only traveling through for a few days would come back to Judaism. And again, I was there in the 80s. I remember that. They used to call them walnuts because they kids had come from the wall. And the people would, you would sign up Friday night to take whatever students, you know, we have hospitality here. So there would be rabbis who would round up whoever happened to pop up at the wall that night. You would invite them for a Shabbos meal. And so I would go to eat at someone's house. And you'd turn up, you'd have one guy from San Francisco and another girl from here. And most of the time they were Jewish. Sometimes they weren't even Jewish. But see, once you round them up, you had to take. But there's a whole, the shame of it was that it came, once people stopped this backpacking thing, it's no longer the movement that it was. I don't know exactly why it's just not happening as much, or maybe they don't travel the way, maybe because it's air travel, maybe isn't what it used to be, but it used to be you didn't need passports to travel, it used to be that a young person could just get along in foreign countries and just hang around like without very little money, just go and experience. It was like different places, and they work a little odd jobs, and they very easily, it was just a thing to do, but there were many yeshivas that set themselves up for these students, and by the hundreds, I mean it wasn't by the thousands, but you had hundreds of young people. But the reason it was successful is there's nothing like the Torah of Yerushalayim, you know, Kimitzion. There's something about the Kolo here has a trip to Israel, and a lot of the shuls have trips to Israel, and it's at a big expense. But one of the reasons that people do it, not only to see Israel, is because somehow when you hear the words there, the same words of Torah, and it's in Jerusalem, it's from Zion, it has a different effect on a person. It's the most, because you're at the source. When you're at...
Excuse me, Romney was there about a week ago.
I don't think he went to a yeshiva, but he was there.
But there was a change in him that you could see on TV, or
really?
Maybe,
yeah.
I imagine. I don't know. But I had the impression that he was really impressed.
Really, really interesting.
Yeah, he went to the wall. And,
mm-hmm. I see.
And of course, he praised Israel, the culture, too much, and he got in trouble.
Oh, I see. Maybe he got infected with it. Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
that's true.
Right.
He was playing to his audience, I'm sorry.
Yes, okay, right. But there is something to it. In other words, even if there are people that you try to teach them Torah here in America, they went to Hebrew school, they went here, they went there, there's something about being in Jerusalem and learning there that it's the source, it's where it comes from, and it's just can be very powerful. And so that's really from this verse here. Verse 4.
Is it possible to have the opposite effect there, though?
Sure. There are people that are not... I mean, if somebody goes because they think that it's going to attract them, and in the end, it doesn't, so then it's the opposite. They feel like they tried it didn't work. And this is really referring to the Messianic times, not necessarily right now.
Yeah,
so there's no... It's not like for sure, you know, like... there are many people that then, as far as study, some people do better studying in other places other than Israel, or like, you know, but they did have that phenomena of they originally hoped that it would become a big movement. It never was huge, but I said every year hundreds of young people came back to Judaism, and it wasn't even coming back. They just, they would study in Israel, and, I had, my older brother had, two friends, he was a product of the 60s, and One of them was a hippie, and the other one also had a ponytail and you know, barefoot, and they were always drinking and smoking, and they dressed a certain way. And they went to Israel, and when they came back. Two of his friends came back religious, and I was shocked. One of them came back like a Jewish hippie. He was the same as he was before, except he was into Kabbalah and into like Shlomo Karlbach, like the other one actually got serious. But they both were influenced by being in Israel. The question about
how long were they in Israel?
Maybe it was a summer, or maybe it was a year, 6 months, or something like that. It's a time. But there's no question, going to the source, even when we're here, it comes out of Kimitzian Tetzes, it comes out of Zion. Okay. Now, these nations that come back, especially their nations like Germany, like Russia, like the Arab nations, it's not that they can just all of a sudden say, oh, I guess we goofed, and there's going to be a rebuke. The Shofet Bein Hagoyim, and they're fighting with each other, so the Mashiach is going to have to judge between them. V'hochiach. And there'll be a la'amim rabim. A lot of them aren't going to be too happy. A lot of them need to be told off. There's going to be a rebuke. V'kitzu harbos le'itim. And they're going to have to destroy those swords. And we don't waste things, but we're going to recycle them, turn them into plows. B'chanosei l'mizmoros, and we're going to use all the technology that people have used to destroy things, and use it for good things. We use it for plowing and pruning. Lo yisa goy al goy chayav. And even people, the way of the world is people like to threaten each other. That's not going to work anymore. There's going to be a new world order. Things aren't going to go because one nation is threatening, you know, is doing missile tests, and they won't use a sword against each other. And they won't need to learn the art of war. Now, verse 5, Beis Yaakov l'chu v'nelchu. And the house of Jacob certainly will go, get up and go. It's time to come back, and we'll go in the light of Hashem, or Hashem. 6, Kinitcha Amcha Beis Yaakov. And now he gets to the Jewish people. Hashem has left us to some extent, or has rejected us, or kicked us out of the land of Israel. Why? The Jewish people started acting like Philistines. We started imitating the Gentiles. One of the things that we're going to see, a lot of these prophecies are very striking in that they could be very much referring to our times, you know, where large segments of the Jewish people aren't acting like Jews, aren't living like Jews. They're living just like the Plishtim. And they're having non-Jewish children. Or there's different ways to learn this. Some people say that they have non-Jewish children, or they sport with the young non-Jewish women, so to speak, or the children of the Gentiles. Different ways to interpret this last part of this verse. They're interested in the kids of the Gentiles. Problem number one, there'll be a time when the Jews have imitated the Philistines, and that they will be assimilated and either intermarried or interested in the non-Jewish ways. That's a tough word.
Which word?
Yes, the last word in that. Mine's translated, they please themselves, but I don't like that translation so well. I think it means they'll be drawn towards it, or
that's a seed, that's not a sheep.
Yes, biku. Yeah.
If you substitute a samach, then you have sipek, which means
satisfied with.
Provide for.
And they're like satisfied with the non-Jewish ways.
Yeah.
Something like that. I see one view is it's like they are. This one almost says like they try non-Jewish ways. It says misgalgal. They roll into it. But it's a tough. There's certain words that aren't the translation you could have. Does yours have an interesting translation for that? That last word of that line on line 6?
No, it says, please themselves in. This follows Rashi. An alternative rendering is, have a sufficiency of, which is abound in. That comes from Ibn Ezra.
I see. But basically it means that they're involved with the Gentile ways.
This one talks about cohabiting with the daughters of the heathens and bringing forth children who are not Jewish.
I see. Right. That could be why that word wasn't translated so well. It means that they are having relationships. So that's part one. And that's also historical, where, in other words, Jewish people are attracted to, behavior with, the intermarriage or assimilation. Number two is that people chase after the gold and silver. Jews have always been attracted to the golden calf, to the allure of wealth. Bitimale artso kesev izav. And when people also, when they have a lot, they don't turn to Hashem for very much. They get very proud. The ain kotzer l'artzav. People have more than they can ever use. You can't even count it all. And there are people that have so much wealth they don't know what to do with it. The tamal artzav susim. And after the wealth, then they fill their land with horses, or today it's cars. Same thing. They have more because they need a sports car. They need a fancy. There are synagogues where you can go to where the cars outside are just. Some people feel it's almost wrong. It's like getting the Gentiles. The Gentiles don't understand why they're. I'm not sure if it's still true, but there are people that have a tendency to be showy. And
everything is a status symbol.
Yes, yes, and that's not healthy. We don't. It's not we don't encourage that. I mean, it's not the. It's not necessarily that they're doing something terrible, but that's certainly not the right, it's one thing if a person likes a fast car because they enjoy it. It's another thing if they have to have a status symbol and they want to show off in front of everybody and they, it's not our value system really.
Well, it becomes a way of thinking and feeling enough is not enough. There's always more that you can go for, because if I've got this much and somebody else has a little bit more, then why?
People try to outdo the next one.
Yeah.
Used to see that in catering, like if one bar mitzvah does this, I'm going to do twice as much. It's going to be the biggest bar mitzvah. You got to outdo the Joneses or the Shapiros or whatever it is.
Right.
From time to time you'll hear that in the writings that's one of the, it's a negative thing that sometimes happens. And so this happened over here that, a lot of horses, a lot of treasures, and you couldn't count, there were more chariots than you could put your fingers on. Who needed them all?
It's another Mercedes and another.
Right. That's right, that's right.
And Cadillacs are nothing now. You got to go to Italy, buy these fabulous cars and bring them back.
Right, right. Yeah, you just have to put it in our terms. That's what the horses were in their time. Same thing.
As they say, enough is not enough. There's always more beyond the horizon that you can
go out
and buy.
Mm-hmm. Now, verse 8, we tend to think that, that we're better than our ancestors because they worshipped idols. Part of the attraction of idols were that people made it themselves. In other words, that I can make my God the way I like it. Mm-hmm. People today make their own religion. They have their own beliefs. It's okay because I say it's okay. And that I told, I'm on the board and we vote what we want the rabbi to do or what we want our Judaism to be. And it's attracted to people because they have it the way they feel it should be. In other words, it's man-made. People create gods that are their own handiwork. If this is the way, there are sometimes things that people don't like in their religion, so they change it, but that's not the way it should be. They bow down to things that they created with their own hands. Verse 9. And, v'yishach adam v'yashbil ish. And, eventually people will become humbled when they realize where it gets them to. He's now referring to this messianic times when the truth will begin to emerge. Ba'tisalehem, and that won't be enough. It's not enough that people will be humbled and they'll realize that they've done wrong. Verse 10. Bo b'tzur. Now this is interesting also. There'll be a time when people will have to come and hide in the stones, and or hide underground. It was very interesting when they had the scuds and they had these sealed rooms. They talked about these passages because these are the types of things that you have to do when they, you know, when there's attacks. You have to go underground and you have to hide in the rocks and you have to, and it says, why? Mipnei pachad Hashem, because they're going to fear from Hashem and mahadugonu from Hashem's splendor. Verse 11. So it's describing a messianic time when people will be afraid of the wrath of Hashem, and they'll go hide underground, they'll hide in bunkers, so to speak. Ene gavos adam yashpil. And these people that were very arrogant, I like to think of it like the Europeans or some of them, the French or whatever, these arrogant people that they're going to be humbled. V'sach rum anashim, the tall people, they'll be lowered. V'niskav Hashem levado b'yomahu, and the only one thing that will be great on those days will be Hashem. Hashem will be exalted. 12. Ki yom l'Hashem svoz, because it'll be a day, not to say 24-hour day, but it'll be a time where Hashem will be accepted. And all of the other thoughts and philosophies will come to the belief of Hashem above all of them. The Raman, and he will tower over all those, and the people will be humbled that they wasted their times with such foolishness. Verse 13, Valkol Arzel, and the cedar trees. The cedars are like a very big, proud tree, like the parts of society that had these ways. Baran, Nisim, Valkol Eloni Habash, and all of these trees and forests, that they will become subject to the rule of Hashem. Valkol Aharim Haramim, and you've got your tall trees, you've got your tall mountains, Valkol Gvos, and you've got your hills, Valkol Migdol, your towers, Valkol Choma, your walls, all of these things. And verse 16, Valkol Anias Tarsha, all the different boats, Valkol Shihus Achemda, and all the different, these are like floors or different areas. People have their different structures which they were proud of, Vishach, and they'll be bowed down, they'll be humbled. Vishach gavos adam, this arrogance of man that he knows it all and that he can do whatever he wants and that he's like a god. He does on that time people will be humbled. The shuffle of ruma nashim and niskav Hashem levado, and the only thing that will matter in that time will be Hashem. Hashem will be the power by Yomahu. 18. Belilim Kalil Yachlof, and the idols will be gone. They're going to throw them away. They won't have any use for them. 19. Uvob Amaru Surim, and they're going to hide in the caves. Umachilos Afrim Ivnei Pachad Hashem. When that time comes, they realize they've done wrong, and there's going to be a fearful, a fear of the fear of Hashem. Umahader Gona Bekumul Arts, and he's going to come to break the earth. It almost describes like a nuclear, you know, like it'll be an interesting time. Verse 20, B'yomahu yashuk adamas elide kaspo. And people then will realize that all of the silver that they had and all of their idols, they're going to throw it away. They're going to realize it's nothing. Ves elide zav, and their gold idols, asher asur lo shtachvos, those things that they bow down to are going to be meaningless. Lachvor perus latlafim. This is interesting that people used to worship different animals. This calls it moles and bats. They had the Philistines used to worship like fleas. They had like very interesting, like Batman, or they had like different flies and different just funny. I don't know I can't put that in today's terms. I was trying to think if people worship, you know, the moles and the bats. Maybe it means like the green movement, you know, the whale, hug the whale, or the, they do talk about that where they're like farmers want to get rid of the rodents that are eating their crops and they can't because, you know, they're on the endangered species list or whatever I guess it's just an idea of the funny religions that people worship and the things that they do. And in the time when the messianic times, those things will all become meaningless.
So I'm wondering, like, here in these Pesukim, people still have money, right?
Gold, yeah.
What about the Gemara? It says, like, you know, put them in a kiss. money would eat up your pocket. Like, don't have money, so.
That might be the Jewish people. This is a Gentile nation. So.
Oh, that could apply to the Jews, maybe?
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
Like, tuition will eat your pockets up.
Some people say there'll be a lot of inflation and a lot of money will be scarce. You know, the messianic tribulations. So it talks about there being, you know, the people will go through hard times and so on. But I guess it could just be different nations. Some people will go through hard times and some people will still have their wealth. He's somewhat repetitive, but that's fine. That's the way a message comes through, is when you have that repetition. So again, he talks about people hiding in their holes and people going in their sealed rooms. And people love over Nikras Hatsurim. Sometimes when people are bombed, so they're the constant process, they become afraid and they have to go into the bomb shelters. And through that process, they become humbled. Mifnei Pachad Hashem. And they're afraid of the fear of Hashem. Mahar Gota Bekumul Oretz. And they go into these breaks into the ground. They have those in, today that's like the Iranians. They supposedly built this nuclear facility underground, and the Lebanese Hezbollah have all these underground, because they think, so then the bomb makers come up with new bunker breakers that can go underground. That's all you got. You know, it's like the, but it, that's what's described here, is that the people will hide in these underground shelters. 22. Chaduchem min Adam asher neshama be'apo. And Hashem created man and bestowed greatness upon man. A man is in the image of a God, of Hashem. But mankind will have sinned and perverted himself. And Hashem will, some of mankind will be destroyed. Hashem will pull back from some parts of mankind who has kibaman nekshifu, because what is he worthy of? And so it's like a... it's a description of that future time, again, which he said to the people of his time, but it won't take much to envision it to the people of our time. We're going to learn that the next chapter is going to talk about the Jewish American princesses, about certain people that are into, again, also that in different times in society, maybe in ancient times it took on a different form. But people go in patterns. People get attracted to different things, and we hope for a time when we turn back to Hashem and we straighten out our ways. And,
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.